As businesses face the challenge to increase efficiency and scale while preparing for the technology needs of tomorrow, more and more of them are turning to application and solution-based architectures in their data centers, what Gartner calls fabric-based infrastructure. In this program, Gartner Research Vice President and Distinguished Analyst Donna Scott and Paul Perez, Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for the Data Center Business Group at Cisco Systems, examine the motivations and impact for organizations moving to a fabric-based infrastructure. We'll also find out how Cisco UCS helps customers achieve their goals. What types of companies have adopted fabric-based infrastructure, and how did they overcome their biggest challenges?
We interviewed more than 24 service providers and enterprises and government agencies that have implemented fabric-based infrastructure. On the enterprise side, they crossed both large and medium-sized organizations, as well as from many industries, including financial service, retail, healthcare, and energy. From a use case perspective, there were three driving factors across these organizations. The first was legacy modernization. They were looking to upgrade and modernize their infrastructure, and the fabric-based infrastructure was the key behind that modernization. In the second case, they were looking to have a cloud computing architecture. This was the case for nearly all the service providers. They were re-architecting to offer cloud services, and they were using fabric-based infrastructure as the core of their cloud computing architecture. Enterprises also had a drive for cloud computing, especially those that were moving from virtualization towards private cloud and even hybrid cloud computing. The third use case was related to a mission-critical application deployment, tended to be a new project or new initiative where they needed to acquire new infrastructure to deploy that mission-critical application. As far as challenges, it wasn't so difficult to bring fabric-based infrastructure in-house and install it. The difficult thing was changing the policies and procedures and crossing the technology domains in order to get the expected benefits from it. For example, fabric-based infrastructure enables you to provision in minutes to hours as opposed to provisioning infrastructure in weeks or months. That's terrific, but in order to achieve it, you need more than just the infrastructure. You need your people across the server, storage, and networking domains to work together to create the policies, to create the automation, and to create the standard configurations so you can implement it very fast and effectively get the value proposition. We saw more difficulty for those policy and procedure changes in enterprises than we did in service providers. Primarily, we believe, because service providers are in the business of providing IT services. So they were driven by a business model in order to implement fabric-based infrastructure. The enterprises needed a little more assistance in their policies and procedures and working together collaboratively in order to gain that value.
Both enterprise and service providers called out significant advantages to FBI adoption. What were the commonalities and differences?
The overall value proposition of fabric-based infrastructure fell into three categories. One is cost, two is speed, and three is recovery or migration. On the cost side, cost reduction was cited as the major driving force behind justification of fabric-based infrastructure. Yet the service provider justification was different than the enterprise justification. On the enterprise side, the primary force was through capital cost savings. They were upgrading their infrastructure, and they were saving significant capital costs through server and network, specifically port consolidation. So that is how the enterprise justified the fabric-based infrastructure. On the service provider side, it was very different. Most of the service providers were focused on building cloud infrastructures and offering cloud computing services to their clients. So they were implementing in order to reduce the overall operating cost of the resulting solution. So the resulting fabric-based infrastructure reduced their operating costs in many ways. First, it allowed them to automate their service delivery, so their labor cost was reduced. So it was, they provisioned the infrastructure fast, but without people intervention. So they lowered their cost of service delivery. But they also increased their virtual machine density. And by increasing their density, they raised the overall revenue per square footage of the floor space. And so that is a key metric they were using to drive the value proposition of fabric-based infrastructure. One service provider actually told us that their overall labor cost savings was two-thirds less than a traditional data center. So that's pretty significant. But I don't want to forget about the other benefits, because while cost reduction was used to drive justification, the other benefits were very important. Speed had two dimensions. One was the speed to implementation, because the fabric-based infrastructure came pre-integrated and pre-tested. The other part of the speed was speeding infrastructure deployment, so provisioning the infrastructure in a matter of minutes or hours instead of weeks and months. And then the third dimension was recovery or migration. In the unfortunate event of a infrastructure failure, because the fabric-based infrastructure comes with server templates or profiles, these profiles provide metadata associated with the server, the CPU, the amount of memory, the IP address, and so forth. And because it documents those things, anytime a server fails, it can be recreated very quickly. And so that saves both the labor time associated with the recovery of the server, but it also reduces the overall impact to the business of the outage, because it's a very fast recovery.
How do you see companies increasing their move to blade-based architectures going forward in response to fabric-based infrastructure?
The capital cost reductions really varied from enterprise to enterprise in terms of implementing fabric-based infrastructure. The older the infrastructure, and also the more likely it was to be a rack-based infrastructure, the larger the benefit they got, simply because they derived a greater amount of consolidation of servers and networks when they went to fabric-based infrastructure. However, even those with bladed architectures found value in fabric-based infrastructure. It may not have been as great, but it was still a significant value in terms of port consolidation and network virtualization. And as a result, they were able to justify the move from their bladed architectures to the fabric-based infrastructure. As far as a trend, we are seeing an upward trend in acquisition of fabric-based infrastructure. Currently, about 20% of servers are acquired in fabric-based infrastructure architectures, and we see that moving to 35% by year-end 2015, so pretty significant trend.
How important is it that rack-optimized be integrated into the same FBI management plane?
Customers like choice of deployment options. So deployment complexity can increase if you have too many deployment options. So complexity and choice are sometimes counter each other. Now, the way you reduce the overall complexity associated with choice is by unifying them with the right management capabilities, both the management process and the management tools. So if you're able to allow a customer to have choice of blades and rack-mounted servers, along with an identical process, the provisioning process, the server recovery process can be the same across both, that's a value proposition to the customer. The way they get the value proposition is that the server profiles and templates are common across both the rack-mounted and across the blade infrastructure. So you're able to recover very quickly and you're able to provision very quickly across both. Choice is a value proposition as long as it doesn't increase complexity. Bringing the management process and tools to both gives you that choice without the complexity.
How important are standard template catalogs as part of the total solution value?
Templates and profiles allow a form of repeatable engineering. If an enterprise is able to set up patterns of use, patterns of use might be small, medium, and large servers, or it might be a specific type of workload, such as an OLTP workload or an analytics workload. If they're able to set up these profiles, which would identify the type of workload and size, and identify the amount of resources, for example, CPU and memory resources that are required, then they're able to use this workload and make it repeatable over and over and over. So they put it in a catalog, and every time a customer wants to build that type of pattern, they request it from the catalog, and they can provision it in minutes or hours instead of days and weeks and even months if they would have had to acquire the capital equipment. So there's a huge benefit in terms of speed of deployment for the use of these templates and profiles. But the more important factor is the fact that they're repeatable, that once you define the patterns, you can do this over and over and over. It's not a one-time advantage. It's an advantage continuously every time you want to deploy a server. The second advantage is the fact that these servers are not static to the environment. From a traditional perspective, servers have been very static. Wherever you deploy them, they stay there. In this new world of fabric-based infrastructure, the server template or profile is detached from the hardware, so it could be deployed anywhere in the environment. And should you choose to optimize the environment, move the environment, migrate the environment, or even redeploy because of a failure in the environment, you can do it very, very quickly without manual intervention. So there's a huge advantage to having these server profiles and templates.
How important is the ability to seamlessly integrate vertically with other management tools?
Cloud computing is about programmable infrastructure. Many IT organizations desire to automate more and more of their IT process in order to reduce the cost of service delivery. So they might start with something like provisioning of the infrastructure, but what if they want to add a greater amount of management capability on top of provisioning the infrastructure? For example, they may want to add software deployment on top of infrastructure provisioning. In order to do that, it's important to have an open API into the fabric-based infrastructure. You may want to automate the monitoring and optimization of the service or the workloads that are deployed. In that case, it's also important that you have an open API. What if you want to do more advanced functionality? For example, maybe you want to consider hybrid cloud computing, or maybe you want to consider cloud bursting. In that case also, it's very critical that you have an open set of API. The point is that no matter what your automation requirements and how quickly you want to get there, when you're ready to automate, if you don't have an open set of APIs, you won't be able to automate. So when you evaluate fabric-based infrastructure, make sure that you look at the set of APIs, how well documented they are, whether they support backward compatibility, what their level of support is, so that when you choose a fabric-based infrastructure, you choose one that has the open set of APIs so that you can automate on your timetable.
The fabric-based infrastructure concept is seeing wide adoption. What does Cisco UCS adoption worldwide look like, and why are customers finding it so compelling?
The first thing that I'll point out is that we're in our third generation of fabric computing with UCS. The 3 years ago, the initial adoption happened in the commercial space, and these were people who were buying one or two blade chassis at a time. We are firmly entrenched in the Fortune 1000 companies now. And we're playing across the board in public sector with federal, state, and local governments, as well as secondary and higher education. In the enterprise space, we're seeing very good representation across multiple industries, manufacturing, retail, transportation, and financial services, to name a few. The rationale and the adoption ramp has been very aggressive, primarily because UCS is a new and fresh architecture, and we're bringing to the market a built-in automation rather than a bolt-on automation value proposition with the UCS manager. We're bringing to market stateless computing, where we have abstracted the identity of servers to be in software in management models through UCS Manager. And that same environment allows customers then to not only be able to move bare metal servers around like you would a virtual machine, but in addition to it, we provide a very good collaboration environment for the different constituencies in an IT department. You think about the server admin, the network admin, the storage admin. They can all collaborate to create compute policies for each of their domains in UCS Manager through the use of role-based access controls. And you know what all this means is that today we are firmly entrenched as the number two player and the number two provider of blade infrastructure in the U.S., and we're virtually tied for number two worldwide.
How does Cisco UCS align with the key fabric-based infrastructure and computing value propositions of TCO, management, density, and performance?
Cisco UCS is a best embodiment of the value propositions for fabric computing in multiple ways. You know, the first one, you know, our studies and our analysis indicates that customer TCO is driven in acquisition cost by about 25% of overall cost, and then 75% is just the ongoing operational expense. And we address both parts. You know, on the acquisition cost, probably cabling reduction is a big deal. You know, we are reducing cables by something like 79 to 80% that egress out of our enclosures. And what customers have told us is that that reduces the cost of their cabling plant by about 75%. We also, on a performance basis, whether it be on bare metal applications or whether it be on virtualized applications, we can provide same or better performance in a much smaller physical footprint. So what does that mean? That means we can do much higher virtualization ratios, more VMs per physical server by virtue of our expanded memory capability and by virtue of our virtual interface card. We have put in a lot of investment into custom silicon to address those two value propositions. So more memory allows customers to oversubscribe memory in virtual environments, and our virtual interface cards are the name for our custom NIC, or network adapter. And what we have done there is today we provide 20 gigabit per server and almost 160 gigabit per enclosure, which is much higher than anyone else. And we provide that bandwidth with a very good SRIOV implementation. So we support up to 256 virtual functions on PCIe for Ethernet, for fiber channel over Ethernet. And we also have a quality of service capability inside the VIC that allows customers to decide what takes priority and set policies for network access. Moreover, that VIC allows customers visibility all the way from the network, all the way into a virtual machine, as opposed to terminating in the hypervisor. So the amount of information that they get out of our environment is a lot richer. Now, that said, when you look at the reality of most customers' environments is that they're not 100% bare metal and they're not 100% virtualized. On average, what we're seeing today is aggressive customers are 70% virtualized, 30% bare metal. And when you look at what runs on bare metal, it's typically mission-critical applications that require performance and sometimes isolation. A good example is database. So what we provide in that environment is what we call single-wire management. Single-wire management allows a customer to manage a UCS blade server and a UCS rack-mount server exactly the same way. No one else in the industry does that. What that means is you can deploy a mixed density environment. You can have a high density blade environment for virtualization. You can have a high performance bare metal environment for mission critical performant apps. And you manage them exactly the same way, which is a big reduction in total cost of ownership. And what we're seeing is typically about a 60, high 50s to 60% reduction in OPEX. The other end of the spectrum, we were working with a local government. This is a city and county government that had a very fractured IT environment, legacy on legacy on legacy through multiple administrations. A new CTO went into that city and a local government for a county and decided that she wanted to transform the way that city looked at their IT infrastructure more as an asset than as a liability. And they ended up doing a major consolidation of multiple sites into a much smaller footprint. And right now, what they have been able to do is to transform how they interact with small and medium businesses around them, because they have created so much capacity that they have become a micro-hoster for the small and medium businesses in the area, and they're using it to drive business development and economic development around them. So, you know, those to me are great examples of how we fulfill the values that are promised by Fabric infrastructure or Fabric-based infrastructure, right? So much higher utilization, much higher agility, built-in automation that allows customers to repurpose how servers are used, and the agility to drive IT to where it's needed. You know, I can't think of a better example than UCS.
How does Cisco's UCS architecture help drive savings and efficiencies for data centers' Fabric-based infrastructure requirements for dynamic scaling and agility?
UCS is probably, you can call it many things. You can call it a next-generation blade architecture. And in that role, it is an unbounded architecture because, you know, behind a pair of fabric interconnects, we have a computing domain that is, 320 servers, right? And the communication between any blade in any chassis to any blade in another chassis, whether it be the same chassis or another chassis, is exactly the same. So from that perspective, it's a very flat architecture computationally. And earlier this year, we announced UCS Central, which is the ability to manage multiple UCS domains in multiple geographies, multiple data center sites, multiple time zones and countries. So that's why I call UCS an unbounded architecture, because to a large degree, it knows no limits for scaling. That said, many of the efficiencies are driven by the fact that the team chose to, when you think about fabric-based infrastructure as being part of our converged infrastructure, most of our competitors were focused on integrating and converging compute and storage. What Cisco did is we focused on converging compute and network, or compute and the fabric. And what that gives us is a much powerful platform, because in the course of that convergence and focus on the fabric, we also ended up creating unified fabric. So bringing together data traffic and storage traffic with things like fiber channel over Ethernet and unified ports. What that gives us is a much more efficient platform, a much higher performance platform, and, you know, efficiency is also a function of agility. And, I don't think anyone here would argue that improving on recovery time objectives, right? Because everyone always thinks about the normal case when things are running. We have to also take into account, and data center operators take into account, when things go wrong and things fail. And the fact that we have stateless computing and stateless blades, where we define the identity on a server in over 120 different ID parameters. VLANs, HBA settings, MAC addresses, worldwide names, and we can take the identity of a server and recreate that very exact server somewhere else, whether it be for maintenance efficiency or whether it be for disaster recovery. And the integration that we have with the Unified Fabric allows us to have application-level recovery, not just infrastructure recovery, to drive much faster RTO times, and that in itself drives huge savings.
What is unique about how UCS handles mixed form factors, management, storage, and third-party management software integration?
The thing to keep in mind is UCS is an architecture, right? And an architecture is where the ensemble of its constituents adds value simply beyond the sum of the components. And as a good example, we have form factor agnosticity, right? So a customer can manage a mixed density blade and rack mount environment, as we talked about before. The second one is the efficiencies that we have built into the UCS manager. And I can't emphasize enough when I talk to customers how much it resonates, the fact that we have built-in automation that is built into the infrastructure, right? Our management solution is built into the fabric that connects all the components together. And that allows us to have a very efficient reach into all the different elements that we're managing. So think about the fact that we have abstracted all the infrastructure into a software model. Now, think about not when you provision and you deploy, but when you're maintaining. Think of it as a day two problem. Yeah, you fired up the infrastructure, you got things to run, now you have to maintain it. The fact that we can give you very high fidelity to your recipes through our service profiles and our service templates, the fact that if you need to instantiate more of the same, we can do that exactly the way that you intended, because we can codify your best practices into our service profile and template definitions, is great. If you define a multi-tiered architecture, right, that may have web application and database tiers, a typical three-tier architecture, you can have definitions for all of those and be able to deploy them in confidence because you have tested them. Many people take advantage once they are familiar with UCS to speed time to value by defining all the templates ahead of UCS gear showing up on their floor. So that integration is a lot faster. Now, in terms of maintenance, imagine if a firmware update, a software update, is as simple as updating the definition of a service profile. That's what we do. You update the definition of that service profile, and the very next server that gets instantiated is using that new revision of the software. If you migrate an existing server to another bare metal with the same profile, you just upgraded that server. So we have a very, very elegant, extremely elegant solution for management. What that allows us to do is to then put our investment into differentiation. And one thing that UCS has validated is the concept of a reference architecture. And by that, I mean, look at the variety of consumption models that we provide in the industry in terms of a FlexPod, which is a combination of UCS and Nexus with NetApp storage systems. What we have done in vBlock through our VCE Alliance, which is a combination of UCS, Nexus, VMware, and EMC, among others. We can integrate our management environment with anyone else's because we have a complete and open API. We have a fairly large ecosystem, and I think, you know, we'll get into this as we go through the discussion, where people are finding value in our built-in automation, and they're finding value in how we express that automation openly through our API.
A key to fabric-based infrastructure is the ability to automate and integrate with higher-level management tools. How does UCS deliver value for today's and tomorrow's management ecosystems?
I mentioned the UCS Manager API, and you know what I want to do is emphasize that in this portion. Right, anything that you can do through a GUI or through a CLI in the UCS architecture, we can express programmatically through our open and complete XML API. Turns out that we understand that customers don't deploy gear, they deploy applications and services, and therefore our success is predicated on the ability to create a solution ecosystem around our unified data center architecture. And that's why today we have over 45 leading ISVs. We're looking at, you know, Oracle, their database and their business suite, VMware with vCenter, the Microsoft applications. We actually did a very thorough integration of UCS Manager with Microsoft System Center, taking advantage of PowerShell, as an example. You're looking at SAP. You're looking at middleware application, things like Zenos for service assurance, things like Cloudia for single pane ignition. We have a very broad cross-section of application providers, middleware, virtualization, cloud orchestration. Not 2 weeks ago, we announced our expanded strategic partnership with Citrix. And part of what we're doing there is doing a definitive integration and plugging of UCS Manager with Cloud Platform, because more and more of our deployments are either for enterprise private cloud or at service providers that are offering either dedicated hosting or public cloud services, taking advantage of UCS. We put a lot of thought and we were very deliberate in how we architected our management solution to be integratable very easily into multiple types of not only automation frameworks above UCS Manager, but also applications directly who can take advantage of features in our unified data center architecture, and also with other infrastructure providers, like, for example, storage partners. Today, we have formal integrations with EMC NetApp, Hitachi, recently announced, and we also launched a SIL certification program because we see interest in our customer base for second-tier storage solutions, particularly around VDI or virtual desktop.
At the end of the day, what are the key enablers with Cisco UCS for customers' move toward fabric-based infrastructure and application solution-based architectures?
I think Cisco UCS is leading the way towards fabric-based infrastructure in the market. I say that we're leading primarily because we're first to market with a fabric-based infrastructure. We're in our third generation, and we have seen huge adoption and very strong demand from customers, not only for our unified data center architecture, but also for our consumption models that we have in partnership with software and other hardware infrastructure providers. Now, probably the most significant way in which we align is by enabling customers to be in control on their evolution to cloud. Right? In our conversations with customers, it's pretty clear that although everyone thinks about cloud, right? Cloud is the new black, and it is an operating model. It requires an evolution from current environments to that new environment. And our partnership that we have with customers is that we put them in control of the steps they need to take in order to participate in that cloud environment, that cloud marketplace, as either consumers or providers. So for example, our first step is consolidation, right? So consolidation in the sense of being able to easily manage rack and blade, virtual and physical, consolidation and having a unified fabric. Optimizations as a second step to in virtualized environments, enabling higher virtualization ratios, enabling higher performance in a virtualized environment. We have things like hypervisor bypass that allow for about 50% higher throughput of virtual machine network traffic than anyone else. The next step is automation. And customers see a very safe step in automation by taking advantage of the built-in automation of UCS Manager. And then they find comfort in our open API that can integrate with the existing higher-level automation frameworks they may have. Some of them might be open source. Some of them might be merchant. The fact that we have that API means that most likely their choice, whether incumbent or upcoming, is already integrating or has integrated with UCS Manager. The third, probably the fourth step past automation is really creating a utility, right? Creating a computing utility where they can have visibility on how they're spending their IT, what is their utilization rate, having chargeback and metering capability so that they can align their supply and their demand and be able to do capacity planning a lot more accurately. And if you can do those four steps at your own pace, improving consolidation, optimizing virtualization environments, increasing your level of automation, creating a private utility out of your automated environment. At that point, customers then will be ready when they want to be ready to participate in that cloud marketplace, right? Because the future of IT is really this combination or ensemble of private and public cloud capabilities and cloud services to deliver the next generation IT environment. And I think that UCS is a no-regret move. Cisco Unified Data Center is a no-regret move because we're taking everything that I talked about in terms of the compute, and we're also applying it to our networking through what we call ONE, our open network environment, which is our application-driven networking capability around programmability. So at that point, you'll have converged compute and fabric in our unified data center and the ability to easily program the compute and the fabric parts through either a higher-level automation framework or directly from within applications to optimize runtime performance and flexibility.
Gartner is an impartial, independent analyst of the information technology industry. All content provided by other enterprises is expressly the views of those enterprises and the speakers. The information should not be construed as a Gartner endorsement of said enterprises' products or services.